This is James from StrawPunk.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike. How are you doing this week, sir?
Pretty good. I started work again. It sucked, but I'm going to make some money. It's only part-time, which is all I wanted. I wasn't dying and desperate. Like, I have food. I've been living off my food storage, which is good.
You had all your MREs.
I ate all my MREs, and now I have enough paleo food stored. Paleo-ish. You know, it's...
Ish?
It's slightly processed foods.
Ah.
You know, some of it, like, canned meats with no preservatives, and then a lot of my deep freezer I packed to the brim with steaks and pork chops and chickens and stuff like that.
Well, that's paleo.
You know, and then canned veggies and stuff. So I'm back on the paleo diet after the week I was eating MREs. So,
oh, that's good.
So there's that, and then with a little bit of cash income, I can start preparing for my garden, spring plantings, projects and stuff, which was a little on hold. So there's that, and so how have you been?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well, actually. I'd just like to take this opportunity to tell the good folks over there. To plug my website, couchpotatomike.com, home of the podcast Couch Potato Mike Explains It All, and home of a new podcast that was published on January the 25th. You can go over to couchpotatomike.com and listen to it. It's called Sonic Screwballs, and yes, I've unfortunately got to come out of the nerd closet on this. Everybody's heard me talk about how much Doctor Who sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of totally hooked on it. I'm like a fanboy. I wanted to start watching the show just so I can mock all Whovians, basically, because I'm like, I want to watch every episode. That way I can be the ultimate knowledge on it, and that way I can tell them why Doctor Who sucks, as opposed to just saying, and I fell in love with the show somewhere along the lines there. But we've got a brand new show called Sonic Screwballs. It's basically a running commentary track for various episodes of the show. Episode 1 is, episode 1, the episode Rose, season 1, episode 1. Christopher Eccleston's the doctor on this one. So come on over there, download it, listen to it, get ready to take a potato into the TARDIS with you.
Yeah, that was a fun episode. It's something we haven't done, but Mike and me both, really, we have the podcast bug, which in 2 weeks will be our 1-year anniversary on StrawPunk, so...
Yep.
Probably be prizes and stuff, which will be fun for you guys. Are you? I'm getting a phone call on air.
Oh my god!
Hold on, I'm gonna take it.
Put it on speaker.
Hey, what's up? Actually, we're podcasting, so you're live on the podcast.
Yeah, our first ever call for the show.
Are you interested in Laserdisc Clerks?
I don't have a Laserdisc player.
But you can put it on your wall.
Yeah. I
mean, it'll complete your collection.
All right.
Well, how much?
Shannon, I'm out perusing the racks at Southern Thrift, and I couldn't help notice the Clerks Laserdisc over here.
At Southern Thrift, how cheap is it?
$2.99.
Yes, grab it.
Yeah, definitely grab that.
I got it.
All right,
we're going to get back to podcasting, man.
Bye,
bye.
Another first for Survival Punk.
How interesting. That was my friend friend Gabriel, who's trying to start a website. And as soon as it's up, I'll give him a shout-out like I do all my friends, because everyone should have a website.
Yeah, I collect.
Yous Guys All Needs Podcasts.
Absolutely. Everybody out there. I mean, if Yous Guys got something to say, Yous Guys need to record yourself saying it, and Yous Guys need to get your own website and put it up there. Because Yous Guys have a voice, and there's other guys out there that want to listen to that voice.
I guess we need to stop that, because Jeff Radke said he's getting too drunk at work with the welder, and his boss is getting pissed about it.
No, I don't care. I don't care. I want to see a drunken welder.
Oh, my God. I was going to say, real quick, before we actually get into the show, we're going way off on tangents, and we need to save that for another podcast, because we have the podcasting bug. There's a new show on Discovery, maybe, that stars a guy called Irish Mike.
Irish Mike?
He was from Ireland.
God, there's too many mics out there.
He lives on Martha's Vineyard, which I didn't realize anyone was there except for the president's Camp David. But anyway, I guess people do live there.
Camp David's in Martha's Vineyard?
Yeah.
I don't follow politics.
But anyway, so he used to be a welder working on things like bridges and whatnot, and he got bored of that because he's batshit crazy. So now he makes his living by making and selling giant-ass swords. Like, insane, like, the episode I watched, he had a client that wanted him to make a dragon sword that breathed fire.
That actually breathed fire?
Yes, it was a flamethrower.
A flamethrower sword.
In the shape of a giant dragon skull of metal.
Well, this I gotta see.
I have DVR'd it, you can come watch it.
Oh, absolutely.
Check that out. The show is big giant swords, I think, or huge giant big-ass swords, something like that.
Has he made sword chucks yet?
He has a YouTube channel you need to check out that apparently he just makes, for a while he just made big swords and would smash stuff and set stuff on fire.
Oh my god.
And, you know, obviously on YouTube that went crazy. Well, so then they gave him his own TV show of making giant swords. But what do we have coming up today, Mike?
Well, coming up today, we're going to be talking about how to keep water unfrozen in your vehicle during the winter, 15 winter veggies you should be eating, anti-grain, food intolerances versus food allergies, and 4 quick tips for living a frugal paleo lifestyle. But before we get into all of that, it's time to share a few words about the good folks at our sponsors. Let's start off with the good folks, our longest-running sponsor. They've been with us since episode 1, JMBullion.com.
They have, which is amazing. Yeah, I was looking back. February 5th, 2014 was episode 1 of Survival Punk Podcast. And the sponsor, there's 2 sponsors on that podcast. JM Bullion was one of them. That stuck around. So they've gone through, you know, obviously 2 years of sponsorship at this point. So they're a company that I highly endorse, enough to the point where I turn down other gold bullion sponsors because JM is a family-run business.
And we're a loyal podcast.
We are loyal. Family-run, best pricing. They beat the bigwigs on pricing.
Really?
Which is amazing in the gold bullion, silver bullion industry. You know, it's very competitive.
Oh, I can imagine.
For them to beat the big people, Monex and Atmex, is amazing. They do free shipping. They have specially run coins. I don't know why you'd get your silver from anywhere else, you know, unless you're bartering locally with friends, which I highly encourage. But for all your big gold and silver purchases, I tell you to go to JM Bullion.
Yep. Just click on the banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com.
Yep.
And while you're over there, find another little spot on that banner called campingsurvival.com.
Absolutely. For all your bug-out and bug-in needs, go to campingsurvival.com. The place that I would get fish antibiotics, which I think is a vital thing to have in your preps.
Oh, absolutely.
Not to overuse them, but to have them.
Yeah.
Because this is really the only way to get antibiotics without having a really chill doctor that'll write you prescriptions for antibiotics for storage.
Which I recommend is a necessary part of any kind of first aid kit.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not a level one first aid kit, but, you know, sort of further down, we need to have a first aid.
Well, we're not just talking about our episode. We do need to have a first aid episode.
Because I kind of geek out on that stuff. But anyway, CampingSurvival.com for all your bug-in, bug-out needs. The fish antibiotics, the life straw, all the gear you need in one convenient place.
And you know, when I'm out camping, you know what I like to have in the morning?
A cup of Joe?
A great cup of Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Yes, I love Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee. One for the flavor, and I tried, I think, 4 different flavors. They're all amazing. The espresso roast, favorite. Followed by the pumpkin spice roast.
Mm-hmm.
Love pumpkin spice. I'm getting ready to make a huge order, so I don't run out for a very long time. So Mai Tai's like, a portion of the proceeds for all sales from Mai Tai Asian Coffee goes to support local charities to provide children with an education, housing, medical, and their needs. So, you know, food. And the people that work the farms of the coffee trees there get paid a fair wage so they can support their families.
Yeah, that's something that's kind of hard to come by in parts of Thailand. So.
And I've got, you know, sort of a special love for Thailand, being the home of the Dalai Lama. And I used to be a Buddhist, so special love there.
Buddhist.
Yep.
No, I'm not mocking Buddhists. I'm just laughing at him for it.
And I suggest you get your copy from there. Go to the right-hand margin, survivalpunk.com, click the banner, and tell Matt Hi from this Rattlepunk.
Yep, and while you're over there in that banner, also find wellfoodco.com, home of the Paleo MRE.
Home of the Paleo MRE. I just had someone actually text me about being a guest on the podcast. Home of the Paleo MRE, the carne bar created by Rob Wolf with his friends John Wellborn and his wife Kate Wellborn, owners of wellfoodco.com. The well stands for Well Food Co. and, you know, wellness. They have grass-fed protein, which is good, and they have all sorts of little snacks and goodies with the highest quality organic, locally sourced ingredients, and just high, good quality food. Wellfoodco.com.
Okay, and all of our sponsors can be found at that banner, as we've said repeatedly now, on the right-hand side of Survival Punk.
It's an exclusive club.
Survivalpunk.com, survival with a punk attitude. Okay, and now it's time for our first news story this week, how to keep water unfrozen in your vehicle during the winter.
Yes, and this article comes to us from our friend, the Survival Mom, at thesurvivalmom.com.
Former guest on the show.
Former guest. One of the most important items in any winter survival kit for your vehicle is water. It'll starve off thirst and help you stay hydrated if you become stranded during a winter storm or a blizzard.
That word was staved, by the way.
Whatever. Unfortunately, I remember the time you bumbled and fumbled all through an episode, and I didn't screw with you, so...
Yeah, but I'm Couch Potato Mike. What else have I got to do?
Yeah. Unfortunately, water is also one of the things most quickly affected by sub-32 degrees temperatures here in America. Freezing cold. So how do you protect your emergency water from turning into a block of ice encased in plastic with a screw top and keep it available for when you may need it most? I hate running out of sentences. Keep your water warm. There are three ways to help keep your emergency H2O from freezing. Number one, store your water in the passenger compartment of your vehicle with you, not in the trunk, because you will likely run your car's heaters during winter travels. This will help both you and your emergency water stay nice and warm, certainly much warmer than if you store liquids in your trunk. I always store some extra water or drinks like Gatorade under the seats of my vehicle all year round, just in case. I've never really had a problem with water freezing in my car. I do have a hatchback, though, so even in the hatch, it's still kind of in the car.
Yeah. Number two, under the heading of keep your water warm, keep your emergency water in a soft-sided insulated container, such as what Igloo, Coleman, and other manufacturers make for keeping your food and drink cool in the summer. This will provide initial and ongoing protection from the freezing cold regardless of where you store the H2O in your vehicle. Three, wrap your water containers...
You're talking over me.
I'm sorry.
Three, wrap your water containers in a Mylar survival blanket, either in the trunk or in the main compartment of your vehicle if freezing temperatures are imminent. Don't use your emergency wool blanket, sleeping bag, or clothing in case one of your water containers leaks.
If hell freezes over... In spite of your best efforts and precautions, if your emergency water is partially or fully frozen, do the following. All of your water should be moved immediately from the trunk into the main part of the vehicle with you, if not regularly stored there already. Number one, use chemical hand and or foot warmers placed around your bottles of water. If you have or are using an insulated container, place the activated warmers right in with the bottles. I keep a modest supply of these chemical warmers in my winterized emergency kit for this and other uses.
Also, those chemical hand warmers tend to expire because I tried to use some old ones and they get maybe tiny lukewarm but not hot after several years.
Okay.
Number two, in lieu of an insulated container, wrap a Mylar emergency blanket around your water containers and activated chemical warmers, sort of like pigs in a blanket. Only not as yummy.
Number three, lastly, place your water containers near the floor heating vent so that when you run your vehicle's engine for 10 minutes every hour, read this article on how to survive a blizzard in your vehicle, for more details, the heated air will help thaw your water.
When all else fails, as a last resort, use a metal cup or can from your emergency kit, like a soup can or larger, along with a heat source like Sterno to melt snow from outside your vehicle. I always like to suggest keeping a stove of some sort in your car, like a little jet boil or pocket rocket. Survival tip, you can use an emergency road flare as a heat source to melt snow and water. Just place the snow in the metal cup or can, ignite the flare, hold the cup of snow above or to the side of the flare until the snow melts.
Be careful if you use this method. Safety flares burn at about 1400 degrees Fahrenheit and emit phosphorus gases when burning.
One big caution. Do not be tempted to place frozen water bottles next to you in an attempt to melt the fluids inside. You will only cool yourself down faster, which will promote the onset of hypothermia more quickly. Quick tip. Use no larger than a pint to quart-sized containers to store your emergency water in. Although the liquids stored in larger containers will take longer to freeze than the smaller-sized bottles, the smaller bottles are easier to store in small places in your vehicle and are quicker to thaw if they become frozen. If you have any favorite ways of keeping your emergency water supply from freezing in your vehicle during the winter, please feel free to add it to the comments below. And that was from thesurvivalmom.com.
Yep, good stuff. I either keep water in the hatch of my car or the back seat. I like to buy the cases of water as big as I can get, like 32 mm-hmm. bottles in a case, and that much mass tends to do pretty good in our climates. When it usually, I mean, we don't have too many nights of like super cold weather where I've not ever had a water bottle freeze and break. I've had them super chilly.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's enough room in the bottle that it allows for a little expanding. And it's not been cold enough long enough for any of my water to ever freeze.
See, I like to keep mine stuffed in little niches actually in the engine.
No, you don't. You're making crap up.
No, it's the warmest place. It'll warm the water right up. Keep it nice and fresh.
Couch potato liar.
You don't know my life, damn it!
Yes. And, what do we got next?
Next is 15 winter veggies you should be eating right meow.
I'm so ready to start planting some winter veggies.
And this is from the website, theorganicprepper.ca.
From up in Canada, eh?
Canada.
Canuck. I forget. I know this girl. She's on a group I'm in, but I can't remember her name. Sorry, lady.
That's not her picture.
Sorry, Miss Lady. No. Maybe Rachel. She sounds like a Rachel. Ask anyone who's not a gardener what's in season right now. Go ahead. I'll wait because it won't take long. Mike, what's in season right now?
Penguins.
Penguins, yes. Did you ever meet with a... Did you get a blank stare and perhaps some mention of potatoes and onions or penguins? Yes, I did. We've become so far removed from the land that most folks don't even know what vegetables are in season most of the time during this time of the year. Because our food on demand system, with food coming in from all corners of the globe, many people who don't grow food have absolutely no idea what's growing on local farms right now.
Watermelons.
No, that's definitely a summer item. Mm-hmm. We live in a country where it doesn't seem outrageous to serve asparagus and pumpkin in the same meal. By God. Followed with blueberries for dessert. All of those grow in separate seasons. The people who are slaves to the grocery store can't even fathom what people eat when they enjoy a local seasonal diet.
But what would our ancestors think of that combination? It's not even close to being realistic since asparagus hits its peak in the early spring, blueberries come along in midsummer, and pumpkin pulls up the rear, stubbornly waiting to ripen until the fall. It's far healthier to eat food that is actually in season.
Yes.
When you demand produce that is out of season, it's coming from across the globe. This means that the items were picked before they were actually ripe, which means that the nutrients are not fully developed. The vitamins and minerals contained in produce begin to decrease the minute the food is picked. The harvested item immediately begins to die and decompose. By the time food arrives at your local grocery store, it might already be 3 weeks old, and sometimes it's even older than that.
What's more, the packaging plants take great pains to be sure that the fresh fruits that grace your table midwinter look pretty. Many packagers add a waxy, glossy coating to the produce before shipping. The coating not only looks shiny and inviting, it slows down the decomposition of the fruit or vegetable.
So they're pretty much shellacking it.
Yeah. Some foods are sprayed with preservative chemicals as well to help them survive the arduous journey to your supermarket.
That's not very paleo.
No. Reducing the distance your food travels isn't the only health reason to eat seasonally. Nature provides certain foods at certain times because your body needs them the most. They are also less likely to be drenched in pesticides, fungicides, if the plant grows as nature intended it to. So what are some of these? What are some of these? Hey, it's just an infographic.
Yeah. What are some of these? Let's see. Sweet potatoes, beets, parsnips.
All good winter things. Some of these ones I like a lot. Cabbage, carrots, potatoes.
Turnips, broccoli, and squash.
Celeriac, Brussels sprouts, and kale. Brussels sprouts and kale, love them.
Oh, yeah, those are always good. I don't think I've ever had kale, actually. Rutabaga, cauliflower, and onions.
You've never had kale? Really?
I don't think I've had kale.
Next time you go grocery shopping, get a bag of kale, and then cook the kale in the skillet that you've cooked your bacon in to saute it in the bacon fat. A little salt, pepper, a little bit of seasonings.
Actually, I don't think I've ever had a rutabaga either.
I was about to complain about that.
You're complaining about the rutabaga?
A couple years ago, when I was just doing sort of low carb, sort of Atkins approach, I was in a French fry mood, but I didn't want to break low carb. I didn't want to eat something crappy and junky. I wanted low carb French fries.
You made French fries out of a rutabaga, didn't you?
I read several places on the internet, you know, forums and whatnot, about French fried rutabagas, and I tried it. I tried dicing them up and frying them in a skillet, frying them in a lot of oil, baking them, frying them, frying, baking them.
Did you try deep frying them?
I tried deep frying. I tried every very. That's what I'm saying. Like a lot of oil. I tried deep frying them. I tried every combination I could, and they never got crispy nor really tasty. They always sort of stayed a little limp and yucky.
I guess it's kind of like what Dr. Phil says. I mean, you can hook a hose to a poodle, that doesn't make it a fire hydrant.
No. Nothing I did. And I tried. And then at the end, I just said, I'm never going to eat rutabaga, and gave up on it.
What is the traditional way of preparing rutabaga?
Anyway? I have no idea.
Neither do I.
I have no idea. Like, maybe I'll revisit the rutabaga and see if there's a way to prepare it tasty.
You know what? If any of our listeners out there have a good rutabaga-related recipe, share it in the comments to this episode. We'd be interested in looking that up.
And then maybe I will make it, and then me and Mike can review it on air.
Yeah, and we'll even drop your name if we do.
Yep, name drop you. We'll be name dropping a couple people later on.
Yep. And now it is time for our Gadget Punk segment. We're going to be talking about the
anti-grain.
Anti-grain, and I accidentally put that on the wrong card right there.
That's fine.
This card.
So there was a Kickstarter that I saw on Facebook a couple months ago, maybe several months ago. Kickstarter. You know what Kickstarter is, right, Mike?
Yeah, I know what Kickstarter is. Yeah. It's like, well, we need money for this project. Will you help us?
Yeah, you know, I've backed a few projects that I thought were really neat, and I saw this one from Anti-Grain, mm-hmm. which was basically alternative flours, like you cook with, like flours.
Yeah, I'm already looking at the picture, and frankly, all three of them have completely fucked my world up.
Yeah, so there's a sweet potato flour, and all the flour, of course, is in quotation marks. There's a squash flour, which is bright yellow.
The one that really screwed me up was apple flour.
They made a flour out of apple, and which is interesting that you bring that one up. So far, I've not really had a chance to do any baking or cooking with them in my tiny house. Yesterday, I gave the apple flour a quick little test try.
How do they turn apples into flour?
Through their patented process, I guess.
Processing.
Yeah. So, I was making pork chops, and these pork chops were ones that I had in my deep freezer, so they're a little old, and they're not the best suited to be just pork chops. I knew I had to do a recipe with them to sort of, you know, break down the fibers a little bit, give it a little bit of flavor, because I knew it was a tiny bit frostburnt, but still good meat.
And pork chops and applesauce has always been like an American classic.
Right. Pork chops and apple flavors complement each other well. So I opened the package of the apple flour and gave it a taste, because I like to taste of my ingredients.
Did you smell it or anything?
I smelled it and I tasted it, and it tasted apple-y. It tasted...
I would hope so.
Powdered apple. I mean, if I said, here's powdered apple, imagine what it tastes like. Believe it or not, exactly what it tasted like.
Got to be a way of dehydrating and then grinding it up.
Something like that. So the flour tasted really good. I was like, I enjoy this. So I added a little bit of water to the pan, to sort of degrease it, you know, deglaze it.
Right.
Added in like a couple tablespoons of the apple flour to make sort of a roux, a gravy, and then simmered the pork chops in the apple gravy.
Somebody's been watching the Food Network.
Yes, I have.
Roux.
Delicious, by the way. The apple gravy on the pork chops. I diced them up, by the way. Diced them up pork chops. And then I made sort of a quick skillet pabil.
Interesting.
Because I used like the añato seeds and a lot of the seasonings that you get, you know, some apple cider vinegar. I did a lot of the flavors you get in pork pabil or conchita pabil, but with apple gravy. Oh my God, the apple gravy.
See,
way better than your wife's gravy she made the other day.
Leave my wife's gravy alone, damn it. She never made gravy before, and it wasn't horrible. I ate a lot of it.
You did, yeah. I actually thought bringing some of that over here to make to try some of it, like making apple gravy over pork chops. That just sounds amazing. Like
it does.
Not so much the way I did it, but like maybe less seasoning on the pork chops and then bring out the flavor of the apple gravy.
Does the apple flavor really come through on it?
It's noticeable. Stuff I've used, like coconut flour and stuff, you can't really taste coconuts. Because I've made biscuits and sawmill gravy, you know, like your wife made, all paleo, 100% paleo. I have a recipe for it. You use coconut and almond flour, you use coconut milk, you do all that. It's coconut gravy. It tastes, believe it or not, it tastes like white gravy, like normal.
Interesting.
Yeah, it has the slightest flavor from the coconut milk, really, but... I mean, the last time I made it, I devoured all of the biscuits and all of the gravy in, like, one go.
I'm interested. I mean, did you just have the apple flour?
No. I have all three. I backed them for all three. So, I definitely want to try the sweet potato for sure. Squash, I'm mildly interested in. But I haven't tried it, so I don't know. So, I want to bring them over here and I'll actually test them and do stuff with them.
Squash is hit or miss with me. I mean, I like squash prepared some ways. Other ways, I just can't eat it.
Well, it was interesting. If you take a butternut squash... You can substitute butternut squash in a pumpkin pie, and you'll never know the difference.
Interesting. Well, yeah. They are both in the gourd family.
They're both in the gourd family, yeah. And with the seasonings and stuff, you can't tell. It just tastes like the pumpkin custard, really.
Mm.
So, Anti-Grain, you can find them at anti-grain.com. I believe that you can buy their products now. You don't no longer need to use Kickstarter. They're full-fledged, going strong. They have recipes you can find on maybe this website. There's a link to it. Yeah, people have made, oh my God, cookies.
This isn't really gadget punk. This is just a very long nutrition punk.
It is. We are a very long nutrition punk, but it's a gadget, sort of. It's an item. Gadget punk is whatever item I want to talk about that week. And the anti-grain, I tried it yesterday, and I was very impressed with I want to find more things that complement it. Like,
I mean, it says right on the package, 100% sweet potatoes, 100% squash, 100% apples.
I kind of want to make a... batter with the sweet potato things.
Oh,
I'm thinking, what if I dice up like medallions of sweet potato, and then batter them and deep fry them in sweet potato flour?
I don't know if you'd really know. I mean, that's adding one flavor onto its flavor source. So I mean, I might try like battering up meat like that.
Yeah. So, let's pause for a moment here. All right, so yeah, anti-grain, check them out. We'll play around with some recipes and get back with you.
Okay, now we're going to be keeping on the subject of food in our very long nutrition punk segment this week. Food intolerances versus food allergies.
Oh, you mixed things up, did you?
Yeah, I screwed it all up.
Wait, I thought we were going to move into the main topic.
Oh, wait, we didn't have a main topic.
We kind of do.
What is our main topic?
Our main topic is the Q&A section.
Oh, yeah, well, let's do that then.
Yeah, let's do that.
Screwed me up because it wasn't a card for it.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought you did.
Okay,
so anyway,
moving on into our main topic this time. We're actually doing a Q&A with our listeners.
Yeah, I asked for some questions earlier. I should have asked earlier, but I didn't. I got in two good questions. So our good friend Cheryl, she asked a question. I'll read it. We're not going to answer it on air. We're going to answer it on another podcast. You'll have to check out Mike's website, couchpotatomike.com.
I can't believe you're answering this question.
We will answer the question that Cheryl asked. Cheryl asked, if both were to be reincarnated as alpacas,
that's us,
who would you spit on and why? Yes, if we were reincarnated as alpacas, who'd we spit on and why? If you want to hear the answer to that, check out CutsfieldMike.com.
I can already see who you'd spit on. He's right there on your page. See that?
Oh, my God, yeah. but we got a question from Matthew and Angela French, and they ask, what is your favorite post-apocalyptic movie and or show? Answering this question could save the world from doom, or it could just entertain us for a few moments. We will answer your question, Matthew and Angela, from Facebook. So we're both going to answer it, obviously. And I'm going to answer it kind of along with Will. You said, what is your favorite apocalyptic movie or show? I'm going to answer both of that. What is my favorite apocalyptic movie and my favorite apocalyptic show? The show one is pretty easy. I know that one way off the top of my head. My favorite apocalyptic movie, though... Post-apocalyptic movie would be... I had all this time to think about it, and...
You didn't.
It's... Well, no, it's kind of tough. I've probably watched Zombieland repeatedly more than a lot of the sort of... That was definitely after the apocalypse fell.
Yeah, definitely.
So that one might be it. I'm really thinking hard. What do you got? What do you got for favorite apocalyptic movie? Post-apocalyptic.
Post-apocalyptic movie?
Yeah, what do you got?
Oh, boy. I mean, I keep wanting to go zombie-related stuff, because most of the good post-apocalyptic stuff are zombie-related. And I do enjoy Zombieland a lot. Wow. Interesting. I know what my favorite post-apocalyptic TV show is. The Walking Dead.
Okay, well, let's just jump in. Well, obviously, he said and or, so if your favorite TV show is The Walking Dead, which is... very popular one. I disagree with it. That's not my favorite, but go ahead and tell me about it. Well, why?
The thing I get a kick out of The Walking Dead is every time there's a post-apocalyptic thing going, what's one of the things that they always talk about? The survivors always, you know, they're trying to rebuild society a lot. Mm-hmm. Always, you know, you see groups come together. And basically, The Walking Dead kind of scoffs in the face of that. As a matter of fact, every time on the show the main group of characters finds a group trying to rebuild society, it always ends in fire and death and explosions and that group being completely obliterated almost. Yeah. Almost every single time. They find Terminus, they've got something going on. Okay, yeah, they turn out to be psychotic cannibals, but still, Terminus is destroyed. I mean, Rick actually says, we don't leave one of them alive. When they found Woodbury on the show, run by the governor, it's gone now. The governor's gone now. I mean, it's just like, I mean, they are the good guys, but it seems like every society they find, they destroy one way or the other, either by accident.
Was it Terminus eating people, though?
Yes, that's what I said. They were psychotic cannibals.
Yeah, so...
Well, it's like, because, I mean, that show laughs at society, because it says it's basically giving you the idea that every society, every post-apocalyptic society you could think of is going to be corrupt some way.
Yeah.
Either run by madmen who are just going to kill everybody, or run by madmen who are just going to eat everybody.
Yeah. You've not read any of the comics, and even though I have some, I don't think I'll let you borrow them, because I think it could... It could skew your perspective, which at this point, the comics I have, I don't have anything past right after the destruction of the prison.
Oh, and spoilers, Daryl Dixon does not exist in the comics. That's all I know.
Yeah, so obviously, you would either skew your perspective of the show, or you would dislike the comic because it's not similar to the show.
Yeah, I'm just not... Every time I cross medium, see one thing on one medium and then read it there's always comparing and contrasting, and it basically ones up ruining both for me.
Or one. In essence, and we'll take a quick side note here. Growing up, I loved The NeverEnding Story. I read the book, and then I was like, the movie was rubbish.
There was a book?
Yes.
I didn't even know
it was based
a book.
On a German book.
Huh.
Which was way longer. Didn't end, like, technically, I guess they made a part 2 years later, which was rubbish, by the way. And the book was actually just one, like, both movies combined was just one book.
Huh.
They just cut it short.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
It's kind of weird, yeah, but.
I don't know. But anyway, we're off on a tangent here.
Yeah, so, now that I've thought about it for a few minutes, I'm going to... I think my favorite post-apocalyptic movie that I grew up with, I love, I've always loved, and even though I'm kind of iffy, I'm excited they're making a new one, which is Mad Max. I grew up loving Mad Max. Mm-hmm. It was my first exposure to Mel Gibson. As kids, of course, you know, I'm talking like little kids, like your son's age.
Right.
Watching Mad Max. We nicknamed him the Dog Food Man because he's eating dog food at some point in the movie because that's all he could find is like cans full of dog food.
Mm-hmm.
So he's eating dog food. Not Mad Max, the first one, like second and third. So Thunderdome, and what was it? Mad Max, Thunderdome, what was the other one?
I don't know. I never watched it. I wasn't a big Mel Gibson fan, yeah. Except for like the Lethal Weapon movies.
Yeah. So, I can't remember what it was. So, Thunderdome, another one where he's with that group of people that have a little fortress out in the middle of nowhere being attacked by, Maybe it was the Road Warrior.
I think it was the Road Warrior.
Mad Max, the Road Warrior. Road Warrior, I think, was my favorite, where he's leading these people out to safety, and sort of rides off into the distance at the end. I love that. Like, I mean, in retrospect, I think it's kind of funny that maybe it was just an Australian thing, because the movie was sort of set in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the great thing they couldn't find, like, ammo was all gone. Like, no one could find ammo no more. If you had bullets, it was amazing and whatnot. But gas was still out there. People were still finding gas and scrounging it, you know, some 10, 20 years or so, whatever, the disaster, which gas kind of goes bad fairly quickly.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen.
So, and I think that's kind of weird that cars are still running that far after the apocalypse, but ammo. I know here in America, it could be 1,000 years later and we'll still be shooting bullets.
Cuban mechanics, that's how.
Yeah. Fermenting beet juice and whatever, but... So Mad Max, I think, is my favorite post-apocalyptic movie.
I figured out what my favorite post-apocalyptic movie is, actually.
Do share.
Oh, believe it or not, it's a movie that most people wouldn't even think about as post-apocalyptic, but it technically is if you watch the first 5 minutes of it. Demolition Man.
Yeah.
I mean, because
which is weird, because society collapsed, but then they reformed it kind of better in San Francisco.
Well, better on the outside.
Yeah, better on the outside.
I mean, better on the outside, because there was there was an underbelly to it about...
Right.
Basically, people living a post-apocalyptic life down in the sewers because they were not going to conform to the madman that's running the town and basically has censored everything. You can't even cuss without getting a fine anymore, which basically is the repealing... freedom of speech.
And there's no real meat anymore, was there?
No, they outlawed everything. They outlawed tobacco, salt, red meat.
I kind of want that movie remade now, but with people getting sicker and sicker and sickly and the sewer people getting healthier.
Yeah, because the diet that they live on in that movie would not be a diet conducive to healthy lifestyle.
No, they're eating nothing but Taco Bell.
Oh, God, and think about that Taco Bell with no seasonings or real meat in it.
Room. I thought Taco Bell had horse meat in it.
Ha ha ha. Hi, Tana. But anyway, yeah. I'm sure she's an avid listener.
Can I say mine?
Yeah.
I found one on Netflix. It's called Goodbye World. And it's a man and his wife and their daughter that live out in North Carolina. And the world starts crashing and all his friends come there. And it shows how he was a prepper beforehand. And it shows how stuff would happen, like if it happened. The community around where people would come in and try to steal their stuff.
Yeah.
So it really shows you what it would be like for that. Not like crazy zombies, but just regular, the end of the world stuff.
Well, in that movie I think I know which one you're talking about. I think, did they keep having like pot parties when their kids were like in another room?
Yes.
I meant to review that movie because I thought... I didn't finish it. I started watching that movie, and it had issues with it I didn't like. And I thought it was, I mean, obviously, I'm not against marijuana. As everyone that listens to the show knows, I'm not pro marijuana. Well, in a way, I am. I wish it was legal. Not that I would do it, but I don't see a reason for it to be illegal. But I do feel it is irresponsible during an apocalypse to be stoned off your ass when your child's, like, walking around and stuff, like...
Yeah, I mean, the wife was mainly the one that was smoking, and the husband, the one that...
They were playing some, like, weed game during, like, the daytime, and the daughter was like, hey, pay attention to me, blah, blah, blah. We're busy playing this game, but, like, it was like you take hits or something when you lose a question or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I just felt, you know, like nighttime after your child's asleep, put to bed. If you want to get stoned then, that's probably a good idea. You know, middle of the day, hey, I want some cereal. Too bad I'm getting stoned, little brat.
Yeah. That actually happens a lot in regular pre-apocalyptic society.
Yeah. So, maybe you and me, Mike, we need to watch that movie so we can do a review.
Which reminds me, I'd like to take this moment to tell my brother to go to hell.
Yeah. So, okay, my favorite post-apocalyptic TV show, by far, is a TV show that might still be on Netflix. You guys should watch it, called Jericho.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, you've seen it. Your wife watches everything.
I do. They're a mom, so.
So it's it focuses on a small, rural, like, Kansas town when there's a giant terrorist attack that bombs, like, 12 or 15 major U.S. cities.
Wow.
Denver, nuclear bomb gone. Like, I think New York is safe, maybe. I think they stopped New York.
What the hell?
Maybe. I think the FBI caught New York before it blew up. Like, Tampa, gone. All the major cities, like San Diego, gone. You know,
they hit Nashville.
I don't remember. They showed a map with pins on it. But I don't remember if Nashville had... I'm sure it did. I'm sure Nashville got bombed.
As long as they hit Alan Jackson's house.
Yeah. So they did that, and then it focuses on the small town trying to, you know, sort of make it after the apocalypse. They have to deal with things like someone tries to reform the government, but it's super corrupt, and they're just sort of murdering people, people don't want to fall in.
That's realistic.
You know, they're trying to... I mean, right afterwards, they're trying to deal with... they're close enough to a major city that they have to worry about fallout right afterwards, so they have to seek cover from nuclear rain. And people getting sick a little bit first. They have to worry about, you know, feeding the people, growing the crops. So I thought Jericho was really good, that it was sort of, a lot of shows just sort of like have crazy things, and they don't portray people as preppers very well. There's really no one that stood out as a prepper in the show. But there's a couple of smart people that had, like, you know, they dropped nuggets of goodness here and there. Like, hey, if, you know, you're trying to grow your crops, like, this will get rid of the pests. And, you know, this you can do this with. And, you know, like, little nuggets of, like, you know, first aid and farming and, like, ice with fertilizer. That episode was amazing. The way you could use some chemical in fertilizer to make ice chemically, which I thought was really good. So, Jericho... favorite post-apocalyptic TV show.
You know, when I actually have another answer, this is actually will probably knock Walking Dead off of its pedestal down to number two. Well, kind of, sort of. Favorite post-apocalyptic TV show is actually a reality show, but only season one of it.
Colony.
The Colony.
Yep.
That was just absolutely brilliant. I loved season two.
When there were all the smart people, that's
suck a bowl of dicks. But season one.
Yeah.
Was awesome. I mean, it had a cross section of society, but it seemed like, I mean,
they were well picked for that first season.
I mean, they were pretty much damn near geniuses in their fields.
Yeah, like a NASA scientist, a veteran old school science teacher.
They got lucky. They started off with both a doctor and a nurse.
Yeah.
The doctor, though, went missing. Oh, it was completely removed from the experiment at one point.
Yeah.
They had to go look
carpenters and construction workers. Like, they had they were able to build some amazing stuff. That's where, like, me and, like, half the country first learned about wood gasification.
Oh my God! They were making vehicles run on wood.
Yeah.
Yes.
They had two vehicles that ran on wood. That was insane. Well, remember they also had that golf cart that they made run completely on solar power.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they went around collecting the solar panels. They knew how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
That show, I mean, it also showed them having to deal with marauders and bartering and all this stuff. I mean, it was pretty awesome.
Some of that oh my God, hold on. Post-apocalyptic show I did not think was good was Fox had one called Utopia that I reviewed so negatively. And I think it didn't even make it to the end of the show. The experiment was canceled because people hated it. I'd have to read, but I think they didn't make it past four episodes, maybe five. And the premise was they were supposed to remove these, like, 13 people from society, put them on this, like, 1-acre farm, and let them rebuild society, their version of Utopia on this.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 1 was, like, drama and retarded, and, like, some ex-con was blowing up, and then they all got drunk off some booze they found, and was, like...
Booze-a-hole.
Some guy got super drunk, and then tried to, like, make a pass to some girl, who then, like, knocked him out, and all the girls were, like, naked in the pool the whole episode, and the preacher's freaking out, because he can't look at these naked bodies, or God will smote him. I mean, it was just terrible and drama and retarded.
Or God will smote him. You just said that so offhandedly.
Yeah, it was so retarded. And the premise was supposed to be so good. Like, Dave, my partner in Dual Homestead, made it to, like, almost the last audition to be on the show. And that fell through. And then I'm glad he didn't go on, because now we're like, well, the show wasn't what they said it was supposed to be.
Speaking of him being on a show, when's he going to come on ours?
His schedule's better now. Like, it got canceled the last time we had it scheduled. So maybe we'll bank for this coming weekend.
All right. This is not my visual celebrity invite, but Dave, come on the show.
Yeah. I've been trying to get him. It's just schedules and work. His work's been really slammed, so he's been busy. We're rambling on.
Absolutely.
I thought this was going to be... So, those are our favorite post-apocalyptic TV shows. I don't even know if we're going to... Let's real quick do this question.
I'll read the question. It is from Henry Worth. Why are people so afraid to speak against the norm? Is all of this political correctness is killing freedom of speech?
The answer is yes.
Oh, God, yeah.
Political correctness is fucking retarded, and I fucking hate it, and it could suck my dick. I've been against political correctness for so... Like, I remember... I think I heard the term political correct in, like, fifth grade.
Yeah, that's... No, I started hearing it... I think the first time I ever heard the term political correctness was in high school, like, ninth grade. So, yeah. I mean, I'm a few years old. A handful of years older than you anyway, so probably lines up around the same time. Might have been middle school, actually. I mean, like, just as a good example, Christmas versus Xmas, which we actually discussed on the show before.
Yes.
And basically it all boils down to this. You shouldn't say Christmas, you should say Xmas, because that offends the non-Christian. You shouldn't say Xmas, you should say Christmas, because that offends Christmas. I say whatever the fuck you want. You have the God-given right to say whatever you want.
Yeah.
There is nothing you can say that's not going to offend somebody, and I can guarantee I'm offending someone right now.
That's the whole concept of offending people, I think, is just fucking retarded.
People shouldn't be such whiny little bitches and take everything personally.
Yeah. I mean, really, it comes down to that. Like, if you don't like what I say, well, fuck me. I mean, really,
it doesn't matter. Listen. You don't have to listen.
Yeah. I mean, if... Heaven's sakes, if I said, Mike, I think you being beardless is stupid and you're an ugly fuck, who cares?
Right. And if I said you being beardless and losing all this weight makes it look like you escaped from the latest round of boy band auditions on America's Got Talent, who cares?
Right. I'll just shiv you in your spleen and be done with it.
Right. And I'll just shit on your nose.
Yes. So, I mean, political correctness, yes, is killing freedom of speech, because so many people are afraid to say what they want to say now. And I don't know if it's a big conspiracy to dumb people down and make them afraid to speak out. There's definitely been for the past, I don't know, since World War II, a demasculination of our men. I mean, men are now being raised by so many women that they're afraid to be a man. And that's part of political correctness. You're afraid to speak up about how you feel. You're afraid if you'll offend a woman or you'll make someone sad or whatever. Well, fuck it. It's not your job to protect someone's feelings. You're supposed to be you regardless of what other people think.
And personally, I believe that if you want to say something to offend somebody and you want to say something that's going to hurt somebody's feelings, you should have the complete right to say that. If you don't want to offend somebody or don't hurt somebody's feelings, censor yourself. You shouldn't have to do that just because you're afraid.
Yeah. I mean, there's a line between... You know, speaking your mind and being a jackass, though, but...
I mean, if your goal is to be a jackass, I mean, Amendment 1, you should be able to be a jackass. I mean, the Phelpses have never had a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, okay. In counter-response to what we podcast about last week, I think Michael Moore is a fucking douche nozzle, but he has First Amendment right to say that thing. whatever he wants to say. It's true. He's a jackass. I disagree with him. But he has the right to say it.
And you have the First Amendment right to say that he's a jackass.
Yes, just like what I said on the Survival Punk page last week. Yes, he has the First Amendment right to say that snipers are cowards. I had the First Amendment right to call him a jackass.
Right, and I have the First Amendment right to tell him to eat a bowl of dicks.
Yes. So Jeff Radke now is so trash, he doesn't know what we're talking about anymore, you guys.
You guys will catch up with it in a minute. Ain't that right, yeah. Jeff?
So, Henry, that's our response. Yes, political correctness is killing freedom of speech. Fuck it. Be yourself. Say whatever you want.
Eat a bowl of dicks.
Not Henry.
Well, no, not Henry.
Go tell people to eat a bowl of dicks.
Yeah. Henry has the First Amendment right to tell anybody he wants to eat or suck a bowl of dicks.
Yes. And with that, the Q&A section is done. Wow, we ran long.
Yeah, so let's jump right into
let's cut down the news the Nutrition Punk stories to one. Let's do 4 quick tips for living a frugal paleo lifestyle.
We'll talk about the other ones some other time.
Yes, this is on robwolf.com. Love Rob Wolf. We're not going to read the preamble. This person is selling the Frugal Paleo Cookbook. Maybe I get them to send me a copy and review it. Here are a couple rules. Don't pull double diet duty. The first is that we jumped all into the traditional paleo template. We didn't have our feet on both sides of the proverbial fence. This inherently yielded savings by just removing the extra costs associated with processed convenience items and processed foods. That's very true. There's some serious savings in what you're not buying. I got a comment on this. We reduced how often we went to restaurants. Good idea. It just became more work than it was worth to rework the menu into something that we wanted to eat. We all but eliminated the coffee shop drive-thru stops. Not a whole lot to enjoy when you're avoiding dairy, gluten, and refined sugars. Black coffee is kind of a wasted trip through Starbucks sometimes. It was a whole life adjustment, but wow, did it work wonders on our food costs. We'll come back to that. Well, no, I'm going to say it right now. So, the other day at my new job, the entire day was on a register.
Mm-hmm.
Ringing up groceries.
Oh, so you got to see what all these people were buying.
Yes, and the whole time I was judging every motherfucker that came through my line. Because 9 times out of 10, there's a correlation.
Okay.
Giant fat customer. 7 blocks of Oreos, all processed foods, maybe one thing from the produce department, like maybe some berries or maybe like an onion or one avocado or something. And I'm like, they don't even know what they're doing with the one avocado. They bought it, and they're going to put it in their fridge, and they're not going to eat it. It's just going to sit there.
No, I dip my avocado in chocolate.
Yeah, they don't even know how to open an avocado.
You do it with a chainsaw.
I saw some silly bitch on Worst Cooks in America cut through the center, the whole thing. She cut slices of avocado.
Wait.
The chef was like, I don't even know how you did that. Like, he tried her knife and it was like dull, broken.
Wait.
She sliced through the seed.
Through the pit?
Yes.
What the hell?
And she left, she gave him slices of avocado.
With the pit in it?
Yes. Oh. Maybe even with the skin on it. I'm not sure.
Oh my God.
But yeah. So I'm ringing these people up, and these are like $200 food bills, and I know from personal experience, buying unprocessed, like,
there's no food in there.
There's no food in there. But I know buying ingredients, things like, you know, a head of cabbage, you know, fresh greens, this, that, it actually is cheaper. I spend less money to buy real food that doesn't have ingredients, obviously, just raw, natural food.
Yes, because you can use that to make several different meals if you do it right.
Yeah, and these people are buying, you know, mostly, like, frozen food dinners and snacks and junk and bullshit, not any food, except for the one avocado that they're just going to throw away when it turns purple in like 2 weeks. It's cheaper and it's better. And, you know, when I saw people go through the line and I was like, hey, you know, this is most of the stuff I would eat. They're usually fit people.
Mm-hmm.
Fat people, 7 cakes of Oreos and Ho-Hos and pastas and frozen meals. Skinny people, fresh food. You're not big bone. That's a myth. I mean, for God's sake, Mike, when I told you to eat what you ate, you lost 30 pounds in a month?
35.
Yeah.
I lost 35 pounds on the paleo diet.
Yeah. Tasty. Anyway.
Ironically enough, I haven't put it back on yet.
It will. Until I can convince you guys to go full paleo.
It will eat my balls.
So, Reed.
This winning strategy for meal planning. Instead of planning meals that jump from genre to genre in an effort to create variety on your plate, choose a flavor profile to center your meals around for a period of time, such as a standard work wheel. All the recipes and ingredients get along with each other, making quick and easy meals super simple. The goal should be to have cleared out your fridge at the end of each week. So one week, do Mexican-Latin-themed foods. The next, focus on Italian and Mediterranean recipes. You'll avoid overbuying at the grocery store or farmer's market, and you'll simplify meal planning.
Yeah, I hate when I don't plan the meals that well, and I end up having, you know, lettuce turn to liquid goop and, you know, stuff expire. I hate that.
There's not a person listening that hasn't bought something and then have to wind up throwing it out at some point.
Yeah. I almost wish, like, when I had greens go bad, I just want, like, a Vitamix to make a smoothie out of it and just chug it down real quick. Like,
I do have one
drink the slime.
I do have one problem with what that just said, though.
About planning your meal so you don't end up with too much stuff?
Well, there's that, and it said you should be emptying out your refrigerator at the end of the week. That does kind of fly in the face of, food prepping.
Yes, it kind of does. I mean, on the counter spec, I mean, a lot of stuff in your fridge is not long-term storage, except for condiments and gobbledygook. The fridge is short-term. Like, I see that as, like, the last step. Like, you've got your pantry shelf-stable items, and they only go in the fridge when you cook them, and they've become a food item.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you open the can and you got, like, leftovers. You got this, and then you have your deep freezer for your long-term storage. Like, I ate a pork chop for my deep freezer that was expired in 2013. But it's been frozen since 2013.
Have you made the will?
You're fine. It hasn't gone bad.
Well, I'm fine, yeah. I didn't eat the 3-year-old pork chop.
Oh, my God. I made, I think it was a 3-year-old steak. Yeah, it was a beef steak, and I was kind of doing the same thing where I was going to simmer it, you know, make it cook a long time to break down the stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I sliced off 2 little slivers and cooked them first. It was still tasty. It was still no freezer burn, perfectly packaged, good steak that was just, you know, 3 years old.
Move on.
Yeah, so we get so chitty-chatty. We record like 17 hours of podcast.
That's because we're besties.
Yeah. Do the best you can with what you have. If you're not able to meet the gold standard of paleo foods 100% of the time, that's okay. I keep telling people that. It's a huge transition to retrain your shopping habits, go-to recipe ideas, and your taste buds all at the same time. So if all you have bandwidth for in your brain is to focus on shopping the perimeter of your neighborhood grocery store, except for Aldi's. The perimeter does not apply there. And doing all you can to skip the grains, dairy, and processed foods, then go for it. I say if you do all you can to skip grains and legumes. Dairy, I allow dairy. I don't care. Then go for it. You won't lose points, fall out of a zone, or somehow be disqualified from a paleo approach to your meals. Eventually, work your way back up to local organic produce or buying your meat in bulk from a local farm. You're going to be at this paleo thing for a while, so be kind to yourself as you adjust to a very different way of sourcing food and prepping meals. Absolutely.
Are you kidding? When I added cheese back into my diet, a bunch of paleo people burned a bag of rice on my front yard.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised you weren't crucified at the moment. Which, I mean, that's the thing. You kept, you and I applaud you, actually. I had much respect for you when you were doing paleo. You did the 30-day detox full on. I was like, dude, you can have cheese and dairy. You're like, nope, thou shalt not have the dairy for the first 30th days.
And, that
and
was,
you did.
That was fucking hard for me, dude. I actually looked up shit. I looked up articles and stuff as to why I was having the reaction, because I started I slipped hardcore into a depression.
Yeah.
I mean, it was to the point where I was picking up, you know, because I was the only one in the house completely paleo.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is hard.
Producer Mike's wife, she was, you know, eating the paleo dinners with me and everything. The kids were not paleo, but I was the only one hardcore paleo. And one night, it was a stressful, I mean, that had a hell of a day. She really didn't feel like cooking, which I can't blame her for that. But I picked up McDonald's for everybody else.
I remember you called.
And I was so mad. I was fuming in that drive-thru line. Because I'm sitting there, I'm like, I can order just one McDouble. This one McDouble, no. I can't do that. I can't eat the bun. I can't eat the cheese. And I'm not really sure if that beef is actually beef.
No.
And I ordered it. And when they say, they took my order, they're like, is there anything else? And I'm like,
No.
There's not. I mean, she had to have been able to detect the depression in my sound, in my voice.
Yeah.
I mean, I went through mad and sadness. I mean, there was days where I was literally crying.
Food addiction is pretty serious.
Yeah. I mean, after the 30 days, I started adding dairy back in, and then pretty soon I just went completely off. You know what really did me in? My cheat day. My cheat day, I started eating all this food that I hadn't eaten in a while, and honestly, it just, like, why am I doing this to myself?
But then you slip right back to it. I want a call to action here. I've had emails from people trying to check up on Mike's, you know, status, and I want everyone to comment on this show, episode 45?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, episode 45 now.
If you want Mike to go back to paleo. All the comments you got to say, Mike would love to hear them and read them. And then the last is
okay.
My turn
I tell you what, I will make our listeners a deal. If I get on the show 20 comments asking me to go back on paleo, I will.
I'm gonna hustle for those. Read the last one.
Avoid trying to paleo fly all the things. As tempting as it may be, especially...
That's paleo-fi.
Oh, paleo... I like paleo-fly. Paleo-fi all things. As tempting as it may be, especially in the beginning, to spend time and energy recreating all of your non-paleo favorites, I'd caution against it. Mm-hmm. Since paleo inherently brings you back to the kitchen, you'll likely spend comparatively more time prepping food than you did in pre-paleo days. Trying to provide your family with muffins, breads, tortillas, waffles, and the like at every turn in addition to meat and veggies centerpieces will cost you time, money, and sanity. Oh, God, that's true. It's not that you don't ever do it. It's that you're selective about when to invest the additional resources and effort. And I can't attest to this. I mean, I can speak in favor of it because, first when I went on paleo, I started looking up all these paleo recipes. Yeah. I mean, I had sheets full of printed off recipes. Just looking, I'm like, I love this. What would be a good paleo substitution? I went on a crusade to figure out how to make paleo tacos, for God's sakes. I did manage to make some very paleo tortillas, but they never turned out right.
Yeah.
I spent a hell of a lot of time and a bunch of extra money trying to do this. I mean, so yeah, I ended up basically, my diet consisted of a lot of pork chops, bacon, steak, and some kind of vegetable side dish. Frankly, it was just easier. It was all healthy. It was damn good food.
Yep.
I mean, so...
I mean, really, did you see your food bill spike?
No.
It actually went down.
Yeah. Actually, it did. Yeah. It went down. Everything that this article is saying is ringing true to me.
Yeah. I mean,
think our problem mainly, the reason why we stopped really, is because neither one of us liked to cook. We were getting to a point where every day...
I like to cook recreationally. I mean, I do like to cook, but I don't know. I just...
It comes and goes with you.
It really does. I mean, I go through spells where I could cook every day, and I go through spells where I just don't even want to go in the kitchen.
Yeah. I like to simplify recipes to be super easy and super tasty. Like, normally, like, one skillet meals. Like, I think most stuff I've made for you guys, I make usually in one skillet.
Yeah.
I'll brown some meat in a skillet. And then I'll add in some veggies, add in seasonings, let it sit there and marry and get happy, and then I serve it. Like that Brussels sprout dish I gave you that you guys loved.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I mean, really, it's only like a couple minutes of cooking. Because you just sort of throw everything in the skillet, you let it do its job, and then you serve. Right. It's not hard.
No.
I mean, you just got to find ways to simplify it. Like, cooking has a weird bell curve of like, super simple, you know, a high taste, but, and you know, it's weird how there's like this weird, like, you could do super simple, like, four ingredients, no technique, and have it super tasty, as much as like way too many ingredients and like years of training and specialty can be super tasty. It's weird how like there's that funny medium where it's like you can just go super simple and it's just you can taste that simplicity and the deliciousness and just the freshness of the ingredients.
I mean, plus also keep this in mind about, because some people like to try to get complicated with their cooking. I mean, it can get complicated with paleo cooking. The human tongue can only really taste four flavors at a time. No matter what wine connoisseurs and sommeliers say, no matter what any of these people say, oh, I can detect it.
Hints
of this, they're bullshitting you. You could only taste up to four things at one time.
Yeah. Another thing I like to do is sort of like, you could take the exact same ingredients and sort of travel the world with that. Like, say I'm using Brussels sprouts and ground beef to make a one skillet recipe. So you brown your ground meat in your skillet, leave the grease in it, and then you put in your Brussels sprouts and let them simmer in the burger fat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so at this point you've just got the flavors from the hamburger meat and the Brussels sprouts. Pretty disgusting. I mean, not necessarily the best. You could down it, but you wouldn't be happy to eat it. You know, salt, pepper. You got sort of basic flavors. You know, enhanced. You got a little salt. You got a little pepper. This is when you start to travel the world. Say you add sage and basil and some onion and all powders, just mm-hmm. canisters and garlic. You've got sort of a Italian flavor,
right?
You know, you throw in a can of like diced tomatoes, you instantly got like sort of an Italian sort of, you know, pasta meat saucy sort mm-hmm. of thing going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You do the same thing. You add in like salt, pepper, garlic, powdered ginger. A little bit of like lemon or whatnot, you've got an Asian flavor.
Yeah, you just moved over to Asia.
You know, you could throw in some chili powder to that and get sort of a Thai flavor. Throw in this can of coconut milk, simmer that in there, you add some extra fat, mm-hmm. you get a whole different meal. Cumin, chili peppers, you got a Mexican flavor. So you find these combinations that take you around the world and you just use those.
Hmm.
The other day I made sort of a there's this YouTube channel I watch called Depression Cooking that had this like 90-year-old lady that recooked some of the recipes that she grew up eating during the Depression.
Okay.
Super good show. you know, this funny old lady, hilarious as shit. And she shared some of the recipes, and you can take those and make sort of a low carb, sort of a paleo approach. The other day, I diced up some hot dogs in the skillet with some sweet potatoes. And a can of salsa and some little cheese on top.
Mm-hmm.
One skillet. How long did I spend cooking it?
It wasn't very long.
No, I mean, the whole meal may have taken 30 minutes, but actually going there, dice up the hot dogs, throw them in, and walk off. Go in there, dice up the sweet potatoes, throw them in, and walk off. You know.
Now, hot dogs are very processed.
Hot dogs are very processed. You can get organic, grass-fed beef hot dogs. They cost like $5 a pack for like 8. But like I said, you know, it's okay. You don't have to be 100% paleo all the time.
Right.
If you get 80% there, you know, it's pretty good. Sweet potatoes, whatever. So that's it. Let's...
Yeah, we're actually...
running long, yeah, as always.
Yeah, we're skipping two of our normal segments. They don't usually take much time. We'll move back to the Wild Edible of the Week and the Permaculture Minute next week. Sorry. Sorry, Paul Wheaton. All right, but now it's time for... Mike's celebrity invite this week, and I'm going to do something a little bit differently this time. I'm actually going to invite a name that's been staring me in the face for almost a year.
Yeah,
onto the show. I want to invite the good folks from JM Bullion onto the show. Actually, I'd like for them to come on and talk to us about the values of precious metals, your golds, your silvers, your platinums, all that stuff.
Oh yeah,
I want somebody from that website to come on the show. I don't care who, as long as it's like some customer service rep that works in a call center in India or something like that.
The mail boy.
No, I want somebody to come. I want somebody from JM Bullion to have an open-ended, open door invite onto the Survival Hunting Podcast. Come on, and we will just that'll be the whole show right there, the main topic of the show. And if you would like to, sell your find a survival or paleo or fitness related product on Survival Punk Podcast, drop a line over to James at james@survivalpunk.com, where we can work out great deals with you. I mean, he takes money, meat, bartering, precious metals, bitcoins, all of that stuff.
Redheaded slaves.
Yeah, redheaded. slave women.
Female, yes, female.
Yeah.
I don't want Rupert Grint.
Why not?
Why not, man? I just want him to be. I want him to be Doctor Who. I think he'd be a great doctor. But anyway, yeah, James at SurvivalPunk.com. And while you're over there at SurvivalPunk.com, you ever feel lonely? You ever feel like you don't belong anywhere? You ever want to reach out and join something, become a part of something greater than yourself? Well, that's where the Survival Punk Army comes in. And if you join up with the Survival Punk Army, James, tell them what they get.
You get discounts to 11 vendors on the internet. Great people. People like Well Food Co.
When you 10% to 20% off your purchases.
Yes. You get e-books by some great friends of the show. You get all of these podcast and convenient zip files of 10 episodes. You get exclusive content. You get all sorts of good stuff when you're a member of the exclusive Survival Punk Army.
Yeah. And stay tuned for our butter eating contest competition video.
Yeah, I wish you would have picked some of that up. We would do it and film it right now.
I've got sticks of butter in there.
We'll have your wife film it, and we'll put it exclusively in the back end of the Survival Punk podcast for the members. Me and Mike in a contest to eat butter.
Yeah, it's not going to be eating lots of butter. It's going to be to see who can finish a butter stick first.
Yes.
Yeah, we tried this years ago. Unfortunately, we used
margarine or something disgusting.
It was margarine. It was the cheapest whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
No, we're going to be doing this with actual butter. No, I checked the package. Two ingredients. Cream
and salt.
And salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Alrighty, but I think that's going to do it for us this week, running a little long. For us over here at the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
And this is James.
And go get your butter on.
DIY to survive.